Hey, this is Chuck Prophet, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
There isn't much journeyman musician Chuck Prophet hasn't covered in his 40-plus years in the rock and roll biz. Revered for his songwriting skills, he's been covered by everyone from Bruce Springsteen and Lucinda Williams to Heart. He's now out touring in support of his latest record, Wake the Dead, to rave reviews. He stopped by the Life Minute studios to tell us all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with Chuck Prophet.
Woohoo! Chuck Prophet in the house. Yay! Thanks for joining us on Life Minute.
Thanks for having me, Life Minute. Yeah.
All right. Wake the Dead. Your new record is out right now. Tell us about it.
Well, it's called Wake the Dead. I think it has 11 songs on it. It's on Yep Rock Records, Tapes, and Health Aids. And it's a gestation story, really. I mean, this record is pretty unique in that it's been 4 years since my previous record, and I've been doing this a while, and I kind of have a par, you know. I kind of generally make a record every 18 to 2 months to 2 years and go out and do the hand-to-hand combat and try to tour behind it and play throughout the States and Europe and the United Kingdom, and sometimes go back and do it all again and maybe some festivals in the summer and really try to go out there and bring the music to the people. But between the lockdown and a health scare that I went through, a stage 4 lymphoma, which I, you know, was treated for, 4 years went by, you know. But in that time, having that those things really afforded me the time to listen to a lot of different music and really immerse myself in things. And one of those things was cumbia music, which is this kind of Latin dance music that some people say originated out of Peru or Colombia and was imported into Mexico. And yeah, and I discovered a band called Quien Sabe, who are from the central coast of California. And they're from a small farming community of Salinas. And so, you know, over a period of time, I would jam with those guys and write some songs that might fit into their groove. And, you know, eventually I kind of stood back and squinted, and I'm like, man, there's like 3 or 4 really good songs. If I keep at it, I could maybe make a cumbia record and go out and tour with these guys. And here we are, you know, and we're having a ball. We played the City Winery last night here in New York City, and we sold it out, and people were dancing in the aisles. And it's been really fun, you know. In many ways, having a show that is that sort of dancey has gone on to sort of erase the line between the stage and the audience. And that's really exciting. I mean, you know, I've been doing this a long time and, you know, writing songs and playing guitar and singing my songs. And, you know, the challenge is always finding new ways to do the same old stuff, and or at least new ways to stay excited about it, you know. And so I really lucked out when I came across those guys. I'm loving it.
That's awesome. How did you start as a musician?
I started really as a listener. I had 2 older sisters with pretty impeccable taste, and so we had all the great records in our house, you know, the Stones and Creedence and Beatles, and I just was a listener, you know, more than anything. And eventually my sister brought home one of those CYO camp, Catholic Youth Organization, nylon string guitars, and I learned a few basic chords, and I was off and running.
How old were you?
I was like, you know, 11 or 12, and got some lessons just for a couple months and had an excellent teacher, and I learned some of the basic useful stuff that I'm still using, you know, which is learning about chords and things like that, intervals, and enough that I could start to pick up the Jeff Beck licks out of the Yardbirds records and things. Yeah, and then punk rock came along. It just enabled anybody to start a band and do things as audacious as writing your own songs. And, you know, that was the next step for me. Played in a lot of bands. Yeah. On the job training, really, yeah. In many ways, yeah.
Tell us about that, your first brush with fame. What was that?
I'm still trying to break into the music business, honestly. I don't know that I'm actually in it, but I was in a band called Green on Red, you know, and one of the first things we did was we went over and did a European tour. We started in Sweden. And we went back, I think, again, and I remember these Swedish promoters said, if you guys want, you could go to London on the way back to Newark or whatever it was. Is that something you guys want to do? We said, yeah, sure, you know. So I remember we flew from Stockholm to Gatwick, and then we took a train to not the sexiest part of London. Somebody met us there and gave us our instructions, and the next day we went to Piccadilly Circus and went down into this basement, into this club that was like a goth club. This was probably like 1984, 85, I don't know. They said, yeah, here you go, you know, and there's some amps and things, and there were these other characters hanging around, and we were trying to chat them up a little bit, and I really couldn't understand a word they were saying. Their Scottish accents were so thick. That was the Jesus and Mary Chain. And so Green on Red, the band I was in, and the Jesus and Mary Chain played this legendary gig in the basement of this goth club. And, you know, they had the weekly papers in England. So when you talk about Brush with Fame, three weekly papers, the Melody Maker, the Enemy, Sounds, and they were always looking for something to write about, you know. So as soon as we got on stage, there were a lot of flash pots going off, and we ended up in the papers that week, and we really enjoyed that, you know. And that led to a deal with a British label, Phonogram, you know. So there we were with Van Morrison, and gosh, you know, Tears for Fears, and I don't know. And that was the beginning of a great adventure for that band. And we made a couple records for over there.
And you've collabed with so many people, and so many people have done your songs. Warren Zevon, Bruce Springsteen, Peter Wolf, Kelly Willis, Hart, Jim Dickinson, the list goes on. Do you have a favorite collab?
Oh my, I mean, I learned so much from Jim Dickinson, the sort of maverick producer out of Memphis, who was sort of an extension of the great Sam Phillips. He taught us so much, and when he produced Green on Red, we were really pretty challenged as musicians. And his thing was like, yeah, don't let anybody ever make you feel bad about what you're doing. And that really helped us a lot, you know, when we needed it. And he was a huge influence on me. And when you talk about other people like Warren Zevon, out of the list, Warren didn't record one of my songs, but the other people on your list that you just mentioned had, yeah. So I did a session with Warren Zevon for a record called Life Will Kill Ya. I was hired as a guitar player. You know, it was rough going, man. I gotta tell you, you know. I mean, I consider it one of the best paid internships of my life, you know. But he was a character. God, I never thought that, you know, a couple years later he'd be gone. I grabbed every trick that he let out of his bag, you know. He was definitely somebody that I looked up to as a songwriter, and I still do, you know.
So cool.
The greatest.
So cool. Why was it tough? Was he tough?
Yeah, he was tough. Yeah, he was tough.
The best ones are.
Yeah, actually, the difficult ones are often easier to get along with, because you know why they're difficult, because they're trying to wrestle something to the ground, and they're you know, they're focused on it. And you know, you just got to help them achieve their vision, you know.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at it.
But that's, you know, who you're dealing with, somebody that's intense, you know. Sometimes those are easier.
And we talked about Alejandro before. You co-wrote Real Animal, which was his breakthrough. How did that come about? And, you know, tell us about that.
The first time I laid eyes on Alejandro Escovedo was at a place, a punk rock club in San Francisco called the On Broadway. It was a band from Canada that night, a legendary punk band called DOA were playing, and the opening act was a band called Rank and File. And they got up on stage with their cowboy boots and their check shirts and cowboy hats, and it was like, you know, I was like, what is happening here, you know? And the punks went nuts, you know, and the mosh pit and everything. And it was one of the most subversive, cool things that I'd ever witnessed, you know. It was like challenging the punk rock establishment to embrace country music, you know, because let's face it, you know, who's a bigger punk than Johnny Cash, you know? And so that was really great. And I clocked Alejandro, and then a couple years later, Green on Red played with the True Believers, which were his next band. So we always ran into each other, and Alejandro, I want to buy you a shot, man. And he just started talking to me as if we'd known each other our whole lives. And that's kind of the way it's been with Al. You know, he may be that way with everybody. I don't know. He might be a total sociopath. But I feel like I feel like we always had a connection. And somewhere around 2006 or something, he said that he was getting ready to do a record, and he wondered if I'd be into writing some songs with him. And you know, we did. We spent a lot of time between his home in Wimberley, Texas, and Al traveling to where I live in San Francisco, my so-called office there. And yeah, we just ended up writing this record, Real Animal, which ended up being a pretty cool collection of songs. And it was produced by Tony Visconti, who was a real hero of ours, of course, because of T-Rex and Bowie and everything. And it was a good record for Alejandro. And we've continued to write, you know, when we can.
Any other collabs you'd want to do in the future that you'd like to do?
I used to say I was always waiting for Glenn Campbell to call, but he's been gone for some time now. I got to think of somebody new.
Oh, that's interesting. Any music of today that you particularly like?
Well, I like a lot of modern reggaeton and cumbia music. That's what I find myself gravitating towards. And, you know, there's just so many great songwriters out there. There's a band out of San Francisco now called Fake Fruit, who are really inventive, a tight little band with a girl singer. And they just, I don't know, they just one of those bands that sounds like they know what time it is. I can't really explain it, but I saw them play live and was really charmed by them.
Cool. How did you know you were good with words?
You know, I was a poor student. I had some learning disabilities. I don't know that I ever really thought that I was good with words, you know, but I started to get confidence as a songwriter, and that helps. And I quit drinking somewhere along the line, and you know, I noticed that whenever I walked around San Francisco, I would see people in these coffee shops, you know, on these things, and I'm like, what's that? You know, what's a laptop? And you can type into it. And I said, I got to get one of those. So I became a little bit more. It was the kind of the email era that kind of woke up the writer inside of me, I think, in many ways, you know, just trying to be understood and, you know, practical.
That's neat.
And I read. I'm not the most well-read anymore now that there's so many other great distractions, but that probably has.
Like what? What are your great distractions?
I'm just like anybody else. I'm scrolling through 30-second videos wondering how long have I been doing this, you know? And, you know, I mean, the amount of notifications on my phone between the New York Times and the Washington Post and the LA Times, you know, there's always something going on. Those are distractions. Some are probably more quality than others, but it's a new world. We got a lot of stuff coming at us.
Yeah.
You know? And for a writer or a songwriter, I do worry that, you know, part of what we do, and writing is writing, you know, it would include journalism, would include anybody, really. Part of what we do is, you know, we just kind of stare out the window and think about stuff. And so that, I find myself doing that less and less, and, you know, that's probably not the coolest thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
We got to make time to stare out the window and do nothing.
What inspires you as an artist?
I hear something and I get kind of jealous, you know. I mean, there were like gateway drugs for me, like the Clash's album London Calling had so many different kinds of music on it, ska music and rockabilly and glam rock and punk rock and just all these different things. And it was just all put into the Clash's own Cuisinart, you know. That inspires me, you know, what they were able to do with reggae, you know, probably empowered me to take on cumbia music and be a little less concerned about doing it correctly, you know, which is something that happens a lot with jazz and Latin music, you know. This is a proper samba, this is a proper bossa nova, this is a proper cumbia, this is a norteña. You know, I got some good advice from a producer, Adrian Quesada from the Black Pumas. I played him some stuff I was working on, and he said, you know, my advice to you would be to just keep going, and whatever you do, Chuck, promise me that you will pay no attention to the clave police, because there's a lot of correct ways to do things, and then, you know, you know, it all goes out the window. But the Clash really pointed the way in many ways for me. It was like punk rock said, hey, anybody can pick up a guitar, but it was the Clash that showed what you could do with it,
mm-hmm.
You know?
How would you describe your sound?
I'm definitely a roots artist, you know? So much of what I do is based on you know, the big bang of rock and roll from the 50s onwards. Irish music, Cajun music, and all these things worked their way into it. And I'm a bit of a classicist, I think, as a songwriter. A little bit of a slave to verse, chorus, you know, bridge. Come back to the chorus, you know, they will have missed you by then, and they'll be happy to see you again. Yeah, I mean, what was the question? What inspires me, or what do I, what kind of, what's
how would
my
you
music?
Describe
yeah.
It,
yeah, yeah, it's, well, it's pretty eclectic. Like... It's a result of a lot of listening.
Awesome. You worked with poet Kurt Lipschitz.
Lipschitz, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, many years ago, there was a place that a lot of songwriters hung out at called the Albion, which was a bar in San Francisco on 16th Street and Albion. And there was a guy playing there one afternoon named Bone Coots. And I thought his songs were really cool. I thought they were just unique in a lot of ways. And I ended up introducing myself and we hung out. And he wrote with this guy, Kurt Lipschitz, who's also a poet and a journalist and a lot of things. And so the three of us wrote some songs. And then Kurt and I continued to write for some time. And a lot of those songs found their way onto my records. And then we had a falling out. Nobody can remember exactly why, but I think we probably could have each written, you know, a book on just how wronged we were. He says we fell out over money. He says there was just too much of it. And he couldn't go on anymore. And we took about a 10-year break. But then in around 2012, my wife kind of brokered a get-together, and he and I started writing again. And one of the things that I suggested was that because I had just gotten done writing the Real Animal record with Alejandro, is I said, you know, we could write an album if you want to do it that way. And instead of just a bunch of songs, you know, we could write an album. And so we had a batch and we kind of stood back and squinted. And I was like, this could be like a San Francisco record. So we've got all the characters, the people, the history, the mythology to work with. And there's a lot of it there. And so we wrote an album called Temple Beautiful, which has a lot of heroes, people like Willie Mays, but probably more villains, people like Bill Graham and Jim Jones. And, you know, San Francisco has such a colored past. So, yeah, so and after that, you know, we found ourselves writing more and more. And that's his story.
Awesome.
We're writing a musical at the moment. So get that out there.
Yeah,
anybody wants to work on a musical with hit me up in the DMs.
So that's coming. Okay. What's the process like for you creatively? Do the words come first or sound? Or
the best way is when they come together. When maybe I'm alone in a room, I'm strumming some chords, I start shouting at the walls, and I like hearing it bounce off the walls, like honking your horn in a tunnel when you think, that's fun, do it again. When I start hearing things that I like, then I'm in it, you know, and that's inspiration for me. I'm not thinking about anything else. And sometimes, you know, I might get it down the road a little bit and then bring somebody in the room to help me get it all the way there. Yeah, when it comes at the same time, it's what you want, you know. Otherwise, you could write backwards from a title. You could write, oh, you know, there's a number of ways to do it. They're all legit. And no matter what, if I finish a song, certainly one that I'm proud of, you know, I'm pretty happy. And that inevitably wears off, and within a couple hours I'm deeply depressed because I just have no idea where the next one's coming from. So it's a cycle.
What inspires you creatively? Not people or not other bands, but just everyday life. What inspires you?
Yeah, I don't know. I find inspiration everywhere. One of the things about traveling, as much as I do, if you have a heightened awareness of like architecture, it can kind of improve the quality of your life, you know. And so here we are, we're, you know, walking through these corridors in New York and all the signs and all the typography and the neon and it's just really wonderful, you know. Well, that's pretty inspirational. Yeah.
What's something you always take with you when you travel?
Besides a toothbrush, that used to be the only thing. I got it pretty dialed back these days. Yeah.
You're pro.
Not a lot. I have a phone. And that's, you know, of course, everybody knows that's your lifeblood.
Another question doesn't quite work anymore with the phones these days. Everyone says phone. And you mentioned your health scare. How are you doing? I'm good.
I was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma, which, as it turns out, is treatable. There's a number of ways they can treat it. They treated mine with immunotherapy, Rituxan, and chemo. 6 months of that, a year later, they told me I was completely cancer-free. But, I'm going to live with it. We're living in the age of miracles, I mean, if there's anybody out there that's thinking about getting checked out, just do it. I mean, because no matter what you think about it, every day they're finding more ways to beat it. So if it's treatable, it's beatable.
That's great. Stephanie, your wife, tell us about. So you're not touring with her on this tour.
Right.
But you do usually. The Mission Express, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, she's my rock. After I left Green on Red, the band that I'd been in for maybe as much as 10 records or something, I was writing songs and thought maybe, I was going to make Chuck Prophet records. I didn't think I was going to be in another band after all that. And I thought I was an okay songwriter, better than average guitar player. But when I met Stephanie and we started singing together, I thought, well, I'm pretty good. But with her, it's great, And so that was really what we did a lot in the early days. We were probably inspired by Gram Parsons and Emmylou Harris and Bob Dylan and Emmylou Harris and Richard and Linda Thompson. And those were big records for us. Eventually we got married and we've been on the road for a long time. We added more instruments and got louder. But she's been there through thick and thinner, really. We're still playing.
Now tell us about this tour. So what are fans going to get? You said they're dancing in the aisles at City Winery, which is like unheard of. I've never seen anybody.
Lucky that security didn't come. Well, it's a six-piece band. We're playing cumbia music. If not strict cumbia music, we're playing cumbia inspired or adjacent music. I'm still playing some of my old songs. Yeah, it's a six-piece band. It's really wild. It gets people on their feet. And it was pretty guitar-centric music, which makes it fun for me. Yeah, I'd really like for you guys to see it. I've got a couple of the members of this band, Kian Save, who taught me so much about this music. We've got a couple of those guys, Mario Cortez and Jandro El Flaco Gomez, playing percussion and organ and a bajo sexto. And
cool.
They're bringing a lot of flavor to it.
Yeah, it's awesome. What does music do for people?
Well, it could get you out of your head, which I learned a lot during my treatment. There's also cumbia dub, which doesn't necessarily have singing. And so there's really no images or words to take you out of your, take you anywhere else. And it's just music. And oftentimes that can be really meditative for me. How many memories are completely entwined with the music, especially those formative years? Music's pretty important, And not everybody is a musician, but if you learn an instrument a little bit, then it can really enhance your appreciation of music, classical music, rock and roll, whatever, So I think music plays a pretty important part of everything. And, try making a movie without any music. Good luck. Yeah. Oh, try making a movie anybody wants to see.
Anything else you want to tell us that we didn't cover?
No, somebody once asked me if there was anything that was totally unique. And I just want to say that I had dinner once with Bryan Adams, and I also had dinner once with Ryan Adams. So I'm probably the only person who's had dinner with both Ryan Adams and Bryan Adams. Great guys, both of them.
Well, they had dinner with you. They were lucky.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. You're a treasure.
Oh, thanks. Such an honor. Thanks. Well, this is fun, right? You guys got a cool thing going on.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.